fireball this day. So.
One of them were. Fix it in post.
We'll do it live. And welcome back to season 4, episode 5 of the Such Nerds podcast. I'm your host tonight, Peter, and we are reading Foundation's Edge by Isaac Asimov. I, as always, am accompanied by my illustrious, beautiful, and possibly wanted by the law co-hosts.
Dan from Los Angeles.
And Jason from the colonies.
Which colonies?
From the Western Hemisphere.
Yes.
Whose colonies? Jason's currently broadcasting to us live on Mars. He's part of the secret Mars.
There's only two hemispheres. You should be able to figure it out quicker.
But which planet?
That's for next week.
Seychelles sector.
It's Seychelles City on Seychelles planet.
In the Seychelles
sector.
And there's Seychelles seashells by the Seychore. Unique New York.
Yep. Broadcasting live from the Everglades.
And Jason from Florida.
All right. So anyway, we read the chapter 10, The Table, and chapter 11, Seychelles. And Dan, as always, can you kick us off with one of your incredible summaries?
It's Peter. It's just table. Asimov is not that verbose in his chapter titles.
No articles.
The Jason felt like interrupting me, but anyway.
This is a bad after my own heart. No articles. Yes, Peter, I will try to summarize. There's quite a lot of action in these two chapters, but I've whittled it down somewhat to a pointed spear summary here.
All right.
Impeachment trial of Store Jindabal gets underway with the other speakers out for blood. Jindabal makes his case for an anti-mule interference, introducing Surinovi as a witness. Her mind interference convinces the other speakers of the veracity of his account, and Delarmy suggests they call off the impeachment, only to request Jindabal do the investigation himself. First speaker Shandes interjects, announcing his resignation following the trip, with Jindabal nominated as his successor. Meanwhile, Trevise and Pellerat pass a border inspection and make landing on Seychelles Planet, where they encounter an old friend.
Well done, as always, Dan. This is why you're the master of ceremonies.
Thanks.
And by ceremonies, I mean summaries, because I'm the master of ceremonies.
Yes, MC.
And it's Jason is the master of editing.
I'd just like to say something here. Dan, I'm duly impressed that you were able to cram the entirety of chapter 11 into like 7 words. That's amazing.
That's the point of a summary. You just got to cut up wheat from the chaff, and it's all chaff.
I have no qualms that the large
tell us how you really feel.
The largest amount of value was in chapter 10, but I'm just still duly impressed that you were able to so concisely express chapter 11.
Well, if there wasn't that much, I mean, there's a lot of back and forth, with Jindabal. There's a lot of power moves between Jindabal and Delarmy. Yeah, and then Shandes throwing his weight around. So there's a lot of – we can kind of delve into the politics and the the give and take between the man-children of the Second Foundation.
Like
Second Foundation continues to really make an impression week after week.
How much mind
violation started up here. Yeah. Started up here beyond reproach, ascetic sort of like over mentions like you talk about. And every week it's just a little bit –
yeah, they're just like – petty bureaucrats
crabs in a bucket
regularly mind violating like other people. Like how much mind violation is too much violation?
Yeah, speaking of Stalin,
it's like
people in charge we thought were fantastic, it turns out have a little bit of a dark side.
Yeah, maybe not the best. Maybe a shadowy oligarchy isn't the way to go.
But they sent us their second foundationers. They're not sending us their best people.
I think you did a great job summarizing, by the way.
I think I really whipped it together last minute and they came out pretty good.
Well, that's usually how you do it, right? I think we do a lot of that on this podcast. There's a lot of that
When you asked me for the summary, out back, I'm like, I did the summary, right? I'm pretty sure I did. Hopefully it's finished. And I looked down and there it was.
And there it was. So just, I think what chapter, what Seychelles did for once was provide us with some like kind of alternate color, so to speak, from the usual drab that we have. But we'll get to that in time. But
yeah, there's a kind of a twist ending, but
well, there's that too, but not outside of that. Just like the whole, I don't want to go down this path too far because usually we like to start at the beginning. So, do we have any thoughts about table? Where do we want to kick that off?
It was a good mental exercise for me to read through table.
Yeah,
like I was like my brain was tired when I got to the end of chapter 10.
Was that because it took you 3 weeks, or was that because
is that because it was 5:30?
No, I read it pretty quickly after our last recording. But it went deep. It like dug into this whole political thing. And for me, that's always like an area that doesn't come naturally for me. So, you know, when it got to the point where, well, just to review how it started. So he's frustrated because they're delaying his trial. Then he gets on trial and then he's, you know, backed into a corner, but then he says, you know, well, if truth is an adequate defense, then I have this. And he goes through this whole thing, dig into the mind of his newfound companion and put Domari on her heels. Then it's like, you know, even the first speaker himself kind of turns on Domari, right? But in the end, she still spins it back to her advantage. Yeah, she still manages to maneuver, and it's just like, holy cow! Like,
there's a lot of back and forth. It's definitely like ping pong, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the question is, do you think it's because she's sort of like a power hungry person, or do you think it's because she's part of the, you know, the grand conspiracy that they're trying to work against?
It's hard to say. I mean, you could be onto something there, Dan. That she's
or she just she's the enemy. She's just a miserable person.
I think she's just I get the impression so far that she's just ambitious, right? She's ambitious within the table.
I guess. She's a little bit petty. She always wants to be first speaker. And I don't know whether there's a female aspect to this where we've not heard of a female first speaker, whether it has been one or not has been one before, but there's no one else in the table whose name is even, there's that one random guy they bring up briefly, but there's no other character sort of like, you know, like they all seem to be like bureaucratic functionaries for all intents and purposes, the other nine people. And there's Jendabal, the new upstart first speaker, and then Delarmy, who's sort of like domineering personality.
Right.
I think, you know, when I think about Delarmy, it continues to kind of disenchant me on the whole Second Foundation, like we were kind of talking about earlier. Like you said, Dan, they start lofty in, you know, admirably ascetic in their approach to guiding the Selden plan, and they slowly kind of are coming down into the mud, if you will, the human political backstabbing, and
they seem like petty bureaucrats.
And it's just weird to me because it seems like it's expected of them to behave in this way, the way they're talking at the table and the way they're, you know, trying to flip the fellow speakers and vying for a position of power within the table. It just, you know, it just feels like they're not good people, you know?
But do you think that's unique to this particular, like we talked about it briefly past, it is unique to this particular series of characters or this particular iteration of the speakers, or is it the implication that it's always been like this and this is just par for the course about how they're operating?
It's maybe it's like one of those, like, you know, the closer you get to power, the more you realize, like, you know, how petty it can be and how, you know, there's like these little kingships that you have to you know, deal with and whatnot. But like from an external organizational standpoint, like, you know, Novi is still pretty admirable of how the Scowlers conduct themselves, right? So I think that, you know, if we have this unique view of what's going on inside of the Second Foundation outside of, you know, how Preem Palaver was conducting himself. And so, yeah, maybe it's always been like this. Like, maybe this is the way it goes.
Like, I mean, sometimes you figure some people are Abraham Lincoln and other people are Herbert Hoover, you know. Not all, just because they're both president doesn't mean that they're both of equal calibers and qualities as leaders. Mm-hmm. You might just have that. There's the Preem Palavers of the world, and there's the, you know,
right.
Shandes is sort of just a subpar.
He's the leader. Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah, I was about to say, that was the name I was looking for, and I couldn't pull it up. Silent Cal. He's just inept and hopeless. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, the business of the First Foundation is their business.
His business. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, and Silent Cal had a little bit of action on the side as well. So, but that's the story for our other podcast.
Such presidents.
Yes.
The back and forth between Delamy, is that how we're saying it? Delarmy and Gendebal. There's a couple moments there, especially at the end, the last one, where she totally has him on his back foot, where she's going to have him take Novi as his like second on the trip. And he's like, and I managed to convince them. I was like, dude, you didn't convince me.
Like, right.
You totally botched that. Like, she's already starting to make fun of you. And you're like, oh, like, I managed to exude confidence that was part of my plan. And I was like, yeah, I don't think you did as much as you think you did, brother.
Like, yeah, it's somewhat of he shows his political novice, his lack of political nous in terms of, you know, being new guy on the block. He gets sort of bait switched by.
He gets outmaneuvered.
Clearly, you know, a seasoned political operator. I mean, she seems ruthless, but it's not, you know, based on nothing. It's not bluster. She seems to be playing the politics of the table.
I mean, she accuses him of grandmother space warp. Is she like a...
She rose to her feet to deliver this verbal smackdown.
Yeah.
Our time is being wasted with irrelevancies. We are not children to be frightened by the tales by grandmother space warp.
To your point, though, about botching it, I think you're right. There's a little bit of, like, you know, awkwardness to that.
Yeah.
But we get, like, a hint at the beginning also that he's starting to recognize that he's having, like, sincere feelings towards Novi.
Towards this thick, Hamish woman.
He felt ashamed when he began to notice that his spirits rose when he noticed her gazing at him worshipfully. When she, like, full-on falls for Gendebal, do we think that Delarmy will... Is she going to all of a sudden realize, like, oh, crap, like, this Novi character is, like, creeping up on my man kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't think Delarmy has... Delarmy, like, openly mocks him for her own age. Like, she's like, I'm not the looker I used to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she seems like a power-hungry older woman. Mm-hmm. Who's trying to, like, maneuver herself into the first... She's pretty naked with her ambition, right? Mm-hmm. It's she's trying to become the first speaker. Mm-hmm. And that ticks off our guy.
That seemed kind of interesting because they mentioned it in passing, like, how confused Novi would be to watch the table sort of communicate and, like, with their nods and their winks and their, mm-hmm. you know, gesticulations.
Whatever they're doing.
Mind brains.
He's using, like, the high speed.
Finger lasers and whatever the heck is going on. Like, I got to imagine, like, how much of it is, like, what the communication sort of looks like to an outsider who's not, you know, doing the mind brain, you know, communication method.
Right.
How much is actually, like, said out loud versus just implied.
They also talk about how, like, you know, he's speaking in a different dialect, basically. So he's using, like, the high speech, and then she's speaking, like, the low tongue, right? And then she has to ask him to repeat things a couple times, and then he has to ask her to repeat things a couple times because he's like, what did she say? Like,
yeah, she's a so lady what? In the lady in the streets, but a freak when she speaks, as the saying goes.
The going to call him Hamish for nothing.
But I mean, the point along those lines you brought up before about is Delarmy sort of angling. Like, they have the brain speech that they're sort of shielding a little bit. Like, would he sort of be aware of what her internal intentions are? Or is she thinks she's shielding it such that he doesn't...
They're all shielding each other. Like, yeah, they shield and expose, like, strategically.
Strangely, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's like micro expressions that they're reading on each other. Like, oh, I saw a flash of anger, which are like real things. Right. But they're like picking through each other's brains, like you said.
And is the first speaker like this old crotchety guy who's just like trying to keep up with all the youngins? And he's like, I'm going to retire and I'm going to name my successor. And like, he's just like tries to pull this.
Yeah,
like,
get off my
move, like, I'm move. I still got it, and he just totally like fumbles it.
Brain is calcifying.
On the other hand, it seems like he's let Delarmy sort of like run riot for a while. Mm-hmm. It implies at the end, and like
he's but it clearly like, irritates him.
It's annoyed him. He just sort of let it happen. He finally like pushed too far, and he's like, she just inserts herself as the first speaker and makes a decision to send him wherever, and he'd be like, that's my job, know your role. And she just doesn't take it. She's like, yeah, and also I'm going to keep doing that. I'm going to take no hints. And she clearly doesn't really respect him.
No.
I thought it was interesting that he, like, at one point, I remember he stood up and he was like, that should be me who goes out. But then he, like, still is going to let Gendibal go anyway instead. Like, yeah, he said, it should be my job. I was like, a little confused because it felt like he was stepping in to say, like, Gendibal's not going. I'm going because I'm the first speaker. But then, like, a paragraph later, it seemed like, oh, Gendibal's still going. Oh, and by the way, Delarmy, swindled him into bringing his newfound protege.
The first speaker should go, right? But Gendibal is the one who uncovered it. And so, therefore, he's the one who's more aware of the threat, and therefore, he should be the field guy. And so, he enacted his right as first speaker to declare that Gendibal would be made first speaker upon his return. And then Gendibal was like, yeah, like behind closed doors, you can't really enforce that, right? She's going to continue to maneuver and might overtake the table, and they might even convince you that it's the wrong thing. He's like, yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to come back. But if you come back victorious, you have nothing to worry about. And I have all confidence that is what's going to happen. Either that or the second foundation is going to be destroyed while you're gone.
Right. And also, it's kind of like if the first speaker is the one who should be going out there, maybe it's like, I don't think it was spelled out like this exactly in the words, but I could see kind of where Aizmov was leaning, like, the guy who goes out, or the guy or girl who goes out there, is the one who's aligned with the responsibility of a first speaker, role in this process. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes sense if he's saying the first speaker should be the one who goes out there, and then he's saying Gendibal's the one who's going to succeed him, then it kind of aligns with that logic, I guess. I don't know. It was just, it was confusing the way it was written out. Maybe that was just like a section of the book that could be better written or rewritten to more clearly express what are we trying to get out of that exchange.
A little more autobiographies to go right on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's dig them up.
We should do a fanfic on this chapter and just make a whole
weekend
book
about it. Weekend at Aizmov's.
Weekend at
Yeah, the whole business about the library I thought was pretty interesting. Just trying to follow
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah, the idea that Earth has been essentially deleted through subtle manipulations.
Yeah, right? Now whether, yeah, exactly. It was either deleted a long time ago, or deleted summarily by someone, or deleted by someone at the table because so that they could cover their tracks. But clearly it's meddled with one way or the other, which...
Right.
And I think it also like reflects on the fact that Aizmov basically invented Wikipedia, right? When he wrote Foundation series, because he's got these encyclopedias right at the very beginning. They're writing this thing. It turns into the internet, and then all of a sudden, like facts of history can just get deleted overnight. It's like all of a sudden Earth wasn't there anymore.
It seems right in your newfangled generosity with the subject matter.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. It's like a backhanded compliment, you know?
Yeah. They did call Asimov the Al Gore of his day. So it is fair.
Well, you know.
Did they? Who did that? You did people. That, didn't you?
Dan? Lots of people. People.
Lots people of people. Named, people named lots Dan.
People. Lots yeah. of people.
So I, you know, Gandalf like did like a control F search on the entire library, right?
Yeah. Like,
and
no,
I mean, but
no
did he
hits.
Think to look for like alternates, like Earth, you know, Earth. Like the,
like it misspells?
Know? Yeah, like replace TH with F.
Or like ERRTH.
Yeah. I want to know, like Earth with Gaia. Like, does he even know what Gaia is?
Yeah. Well, part of it, like, how do you know what it's called so many years in the past? They don't seem to know the name.
Right. But that, I think that was part of it. It was like, I don't know, it kind of it speaks to this ancestral knowledge, right?
He starts with the asterisk, E-A-R asterisk, and there was nothing there. F or F.
Ear.
Earth or Earth or Earth.
Ear.
What I was digging for when I reached for my book here was that they use is that right?
You got it.
Colloquially?
Yeah.
I like yours better, Peter.
Welcome to the Such Pronunciations podcast.
You're a charlatan with that pronunciation.
Colloquially, they use earth as a word to describe like dirt and soil and stuff. So, you know, I don't know if that was like just a misstep by Asimov when he wrote and we used the language, like, maybe he could have thought of a little bit more strategically about how he's going to use the word earth throughout his book.
Terra firma.
Soil, you know, ground. But he kind of like just throws an earth in there at some point earlier in the book. And I picked up on it. It's like it's supposed to be a search for earth. So this mysterious planet, all of a sudden they're using it colloquially.
So maybe the earth was inside of us all along.
It's not about the earth that we found. It's about the earth we made along the way, Peter.
So you know what I didn't follow was the importance of our guys on the run, the guys who were actually seeking our earth.
Pellerat.
Yeah, Pellerat and what's my other guy?
Trevise,
yeah. So like what the fixation on those two guys are, because it was like, okay, we know about this recent departure from Terminus, and you know, we kind of expected those guys to come here to search the Great Library, but they have skipped ahead
with tremendously fast jumps.
Right. And they're like, that's impossible.
Yeah. And 28 jumps or whatever.
Right. Whatever it was. It's just like so much faster than what they were expecting. And I can get down with that. Right. Like, so I understand like that the first foundation has so much more technological might and that the technology the second foundation has is dated. But why is it alarming that they changed destination? Is it the implication that they already know that Earth might not be in the data banks?
That's what I took, is that they clearly sent on some mission, like to search for something. And oh, by the way, they figured they would have to go to the library to learn about it. So they don't really know very much and they're on a hunt. And then it was like they changed course from being like, oh, I'm on some sort of wild goose chase to, oh, I'm on a specific, I know specifically where I'm going. And I made a tremendous amount of jumps and a tremendously direct approach to a location in a high-tech ship that it's like, well, maybe, you know, the nature of what that mission is more serious now. Like,
right.
Like it's later in the day than we thought. Obviously, there's this threat that they have, and I think it's sort of in the formulaic stages where they're developing a plan and figuring out where to go. And, oh, it's like something we have to plan for. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, now they're in this super tech ship making all these hyperspace jumps like in a hurry to go somewhere. So now it's like, you know, we thought we had all this time to figure this out, but maybe now that like we don't, because they're already on their way where they're going and they know X, Y, and Z, and this plan might be afoot already and on top of us. So we have to be ready to react soon, and we're completely caught flat-footed. That's my take of it. was that.
And so like, and they're suspicious of Trevise because basically of an instinct that Jindabal has. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. That he's kind of, you know, he's
using a divining rod essentially.
Yeah. It's pretty much. They think he's like a spy, a foundation spy or something that's being sent out by the mayor or whatever the.
And it might be.
And, you know, it's unclear that since we saw 2 pages of him before he got cast out, we don't know necessarily what his provenance is. But
we do know that he's suspicious that the second foundation still exists, right? Mm-hmm. And that the mayor, Brando. Mm-hmm.
Harlan Brando, yeah.
Yeah.
Charlotte Brando.
Brawny paper towel wipes.
Yeah.
Is
Brawny Mando.
She's Johnny, basically
Johnny Rando.
Rando Calrissian.
From her perspective. Rando. She's playing the odds, right? So she's like, well, if it exists, we'll find out. And if not, he's out of my hair. Right. And so, like, I get her perspective, and there's still a possibility that she actually knows more than what she's leading on. That seems that I have a feeling about that. I have my own divining rod about that.
I think that's part of the benefit of Asimov writing a good book, is he could say that about almost anybody. You know, mm-hmm. Pelorat might be sort of this sort of super knowledgeable figure as being sort of an oaf. Harlan Brando might have all these.
Yeah, just might be these.
Might be this. Might be sort of like a figure of the spy capabilities.
Right.
And who's the ubermensch per se? Who's the super all powerful guy who's going to be the divining person? And who's just a player character?
Right.
You don't know. Any of them could be anything.
Yeah.
I'm totally on edge. Like in the first books, it's like, oh, the mule. Like it seems obvious they're putting him out to be something. He's got to be a big character.
Right.
You've got 6 or 7 different people that could be the main driving force of this book, and you have no idea.
Right.
So I didn't realize until you guys were kind of going on there for a while about the Earth stuff and these guys and these, you know, what I didn't connect until now is that what we read last week, we talked about Pelorat and Golan Trevise, and they're going, you know, through space, and they're, you know, talking about where they're going to head to, and Pelorat's like disappointed that they're not going to the library, and Golan's like, come on, we don't need to go to the library. We're not going to find anything useful there anyway. We're going to go to the Seychelles sector because that's where we think Earth is going to be, or whatever, you know, whatever that conversation was.
Yeah, what was the logic behind going to the Seychelles?
I don't know, but what happened was in chapter 10 that we read this week, we realized that Jindabal investigated the Trantor Library, which is where Pelorat thought he was going to research Earth, and there was nothing about Earth in the Trantor Library.
Right.
So I just made that connection now as we're having this conversation that, like, why did Trevise, like, know why that. Was he so successful in just, obviously, because he controls the stick on the ship, but why was he so successful in convincing
Pelorat not to go?
Like, on a whim? Like that there's no point in going to the library.
Yeah. And the thought I just had was, maybe he knows there's nothing there because he's the one who deleted all the references to it. Mm-hmm. Right. Or he knows the plan that is afoot to delete off. There's no point in going there because he knows they're not going to find anything because he's been involved in getting the stuff deleted in the first place.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I buy that.
Me either.
And then,
just popped in my head.
Then they talk about his, like, the significance of his jumps.
You can't win the prisoners' war without throwing out some preseason
statements.
Yeah, you
got to throw some spaghetti.
I know. So I'm shooting that one down. And if I get called out, I'll be called out.
Yeah, one of us will be right. The other one will be Peter.
So I'll still be right?
I don't think I'm right. No, you'll just remove all references of the truth from the previous podcast. And then there will be no record of it.
I mean, that's part of the reason that Jason's on
Jason's
now, so
not
I can't
editing
get the originals.
Jason's not editing it, so you might as well edit yourself.
Well, I'm waiting for the last episode so that we can finish the book so I can go back and keep in all the positive precedence references that I...
That you have?
Yeah,
exactly. The new library.
Can shape the precedence award.
Jason
Florida. Just splices in, like, clearly different audio of himself. Well, I think that this is what happens.
So I think there's definitely some significance that I didn't pick up on until today, until now, this conversation about the kind of the almost prescient-like behavior of Mr. Trevise there in the spaceship. And I'm interested to know, like, with the second foundation, it was a point of surprise or shock how accurate this spaceship could predict its jumps through hyperspace, and the fact that it did like 28 jumps in a row and perfectly, you know, ended where it was supposed to the whole time. It was a shock to Trevise doing the jumps, and then it was also a shock to what's our guy Kindball. You know, he brings it up to the table, like, do you realize what these guys did? They did 28 jumps in a row and landed. How does he know they're so precise? Because then he says, now we have to go find them. Like, we're going to have trouble finding them. How does he know that they did these jumps if he doesn't know where they are?
Right.
It's just so bizarre. Anyway, but he makes a point. He makes his point that, like, that they did these jumps and it was so precise and the technology of First Foundation is so great. But even the First Foundationers are like, awestricken by this technology. So, you know, they got the ship from Marlon Brando.
Two of these ships.
And
two of them.
Like, how did they get the ship? Did Harla know that the ship was basically like a mule ship? Or
yeah.
I mean, I'm really disappointed in the intel and the shadowy organization. That you have one job, and it's like to like have your finger on the pulse of all the secrets and the maneuverings for your shadow government.
They're too busy, you know, arguing over lunch seats at the cafeteria. speaker table cafeterias. You know?
Yeah. There's too much intermingling with the Hamish.
Seems like they're just lost the plot completely.
Yeah.
Gendibon had the point. Like, we're having this giant crisis and just delaying 2 days just for whatever political
intrigue.
We're
going to have this kangaroo court. Know?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, this is the best way to spend our time carrying on this nonsense.
And from, like, a plot standpoint, like, I can understand why Trevise, like, knowing that the Earth references have been deleted from the galactic library that's been controlled by the Foundation, like, I understand why now that they would want to go to the Seychelles Union because it's outside of the Foundation. So you would think that the control of the second Foundation would be less in the, you know, less there. So if there is some kind of deletion going on of Earth references for whatever reason, that might not be affected. I think that's interesting, but I think that Trevise is reacting largely on instinct about this knowledge about like where they might find Earth. Or maybe he like put two and two together and be like, well, they've already raided the Galactic Library and we didn't find anything, so let's try something else. It's, you know?
Yeah, that impression of instinct reminds me a lot of Mr. Bale Chanis, who was a clear, you know,
Chanis, the man,
a sleeper, all right, second foundationer. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was a sleeper to himself too. And so there's a part of me that thinks that like,
is Trevise a sleeper to himself to some degree? Is he,
maybe,
you know, has he pledged the cause of the third foundation or the mule foundation or whatever the heck they are?
The anti-mules
and like sacrificed his awareness of his having been controlled Mr. Bale Chanis kind of did.
And the fact that you can like sleeper yourself like past an agent like the mule, and then it's not until the mule really like dives in that he figures that there's something up. It has a lot of implications, right? Like, I've kind of written off Novi as like a potential sleeper agent at this point because of the subtleties of the operations inside her mind.
You never know.
Yeah, we don't know what this new construct, how they operate, right? I still haven't written off Lino. You know, I'm going back to
Lionel,
the Thundercat,
like from Thundercats,
the Thundercat bodyguard of Marlon Brando, he's like always with her, right? We heard that in the beginning. He's always with her.
I completely forgot about that guy.
And Gendibal is talking about their inside guy, and he's got this information, and like, who else would have all this information that, you know, like,
then the very straight
like
up,
like
Trevise
and unless it's Pellerad, you know, they're jumping through space. We know that there's the follower, right? So they're getting reports back to Brano on the whereabouts of Trevise and Pellerad from their double crosser, right? So Codel's got access to all this stuff. Is he the one feeding Jendabal, and is he a second foundationer, like sitting in the first foundation?
I mean, Pellerad being the second foundationer, that makes sense to me, just from a...
the aloofness of his presentation.
That and the fact that they know that he made all these jumps, right? So who's going to know that, right? It's going to be like Pellerad, Trevise, and the guy who's tailing them, whose name I can't remember.
The guy they meet at the end.
Compor, right?
Yeah, Compor. Yeah, we called him the traitor, which made me think like it's from the first part where he sold him out. Mm-hmm. He's still, and obviously he's still very, he's hot about that. And so when he said at the end, like, oh, my traitorous, whatever, talks about it a little bit in the foreshadowing, then he sees him at the end, he calls him the traitor. I was like, yep.
Oh, my friend, maybe the
not,
traitor.
But maybe not.
There's only one friend who's a traitor.
Yeah, he's the only one. And he's the only one who could follow him.
Yes. Lathan DeBurs. There's only one friend who's a traitor. Back from the dead in the salt mine.
The salt actually preserved him this whole time.
Yeah, he's cured. It's like a prosciutto. That
like a, like a, prosciutto diverse.
Prosciutto.
He's been cured. He's been cured.
It's cured. It's salt. Rock up smoked like a Christmas ham. Oh, Hamish? Did someone say ham?
Oh my gosh, Dan. The connections. It's amazing.
Wheels.
Speaking of connections, it was like an amazing coincidence to me that the city that they visit has the same name as its planet and its sector. That was like the consummate laziness on Izumov's part.
Like the least Japanese.
I mean, that feels very...
But it's like reminiscent of Anacreon, like Anacreon planet and Anacreon city, Anacreon planet, and Anacreon kingdom of the...
Or maybe it's more just like more of a testament to human laziness than anything else.
I was gonna say,
I think he's
it's all Anacreon. It's all Seychelles.
That's the Seychelles sector. That's the Seychelles sector.
Dude, totally. Can we talk about the names that he's come up with? So you got...
Well, no wonder he's so tired. He can only come up with so many ridiculous names.
I know.
Different ridiculous names for each planet.
Right.
Sector,
and I realize even now, like, you know, our traitor, Compor, his name is Munley, like Manly.
Like Munley, like, Compor.
Yeah. So Manly Compor, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got Joggaroth Saab Haddartha, which sounds like something out of H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, Lovecraftian name.
Right? And then he has luxurious eyebrows, by the way. And then you got...
He's like a Mentat.
He's like a Mentat, right?
Like a Thufir Hawat.
Like Thufir Hawat style, like ridiculous eyebrows.
Right? He's got a like computational
ridiculous
power.
Ridiculous red lips.
Yes.
And then he's working for his boss, Namorath Gasavada. And then if you add in the fact that the world smells different and spicy and it's very colorful, I'm like, is this like just like the India planet?
Yeah, it's like implying something.
I like in the end how he's like, they're comparing and like probably keeps these people in their rainbows, he says.
So
referring to their clothing.
When are you going to grow out your dope, like two forked beard that's only from your chin? You know, you don't have the mustache.
My true future beard.
You have
a dope chin beard.
It's like Will Ferrell from Zoolander. That's what I just kept picturing him.
Yes.
What is his name?
The moment I made the Indian connection, I'm like, these dudes all have turbans on. I did like that observation, though. And then, like, when Trevise is like, yeah, and then you get back home and it smells terrible.
Right. Welcome back to the crap, right?
That's what he said. I was like, wow.
So Dan, I think you hit the nail on the head with like Will Ferrell from Zoolander, just like ridiculous, outlandish extensions and non-functional attributes of the outfit. Like checkered, like the guy was wearing checkers. I just got the impression, just like these over the top, just pure checker outfit, you know, and like traffic cones walking around and all kinds of weird, you know, outfits.
Yeah. Jack just dresses everybody like.
And these guys are just wearing like gray, like unitards.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Just like
space, from the neutral planet. Gray.
Yeah, exactly. They just look ridiculous.
Tell my wife, hello. Yeah, well,
the foreshadowing thing was all about them, like literally talking about how well maybe people don't like the found, it's a not a foundation aligned planet, and they may not like us, and you know, we'll have to be respectful or whatever, or try to blend in. And meanwhile, they're wearing like, you know, gray smocks, and everybody else is dressed like a you know, super like colorfied, exactly. Pork beard and just comical.
Celebrating.
Oh yeah, we'll just act normal, totally natural.
Celebration of color going on.
Twins.
We're just another set of tourists.
Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito walking around. Sometimes be like, oh yeah, just like totally normal. Austrian bodybuilder and short fat man just blend right into the scenery. Like,
what about how they left their spaceship and the story?
I don't know how to turn off the murder function.
Yeah, like, just haven't figured that part
out
yet.
Don't mind my gun turret here. It's perfect.
I can navigate the galaxy all the way from Foundation. Just can't figure out where the murder button off switch is. You know? The
murder button off switch.
They would have been better off paying like a hobo like $15 to like watch your car.
Right.
Like, here, totally. Make sure nothing happens. Yeah, there'll be another 15 in for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Pay the kid on the corner. The kid on the street is there waiting to get paid to look after your car or waiting for you to not pay him
or
so he can jack your car. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting, like the kind of political situation of the Seychelles Union and the fact that, I don't know, Trevise seemed to like overly explain that, like, oh, we basically have this country exists because we allow it to exist. And then like their culture is essentially in reaction to ours. Mm-hmm. So like they resent our grays.
Right. They're an antithesis. So they depend on the thesis of Foundation to be the antithesis of Foundation.
Which is like the
in
most
in their own minds.
Like, you know, centrist like point of view that you could have to any kind of other culture. Like, well, they're only like this because they resent us and how great we are.
Right.
Right. Well, maybe they're like that because they didn't grow up on like a resourceless planet. They like can't afford colored dye. Like, and then that became like part of your economic like policy, essentially. Like, are all of their newspapers in black and white still?
I don't know, Peter.
I think they must be. Or are they? It's all gray newsprint still. They haven't figured out like the color printer. That's why the spaceship is just like a big white egg in my mind, like traveling through space.
There's a picture of it right on the front of the book.
What?
Can you see it? Oh, no, I'm not holding it up to the wrong camera. See it in the back?
Yeah.
You want to talk about people who can't figure out technical operations.
Let me hold up this book.
Build it up to
the podcast.
The picture of my screen. Can you see it?
So
yeah, I thought it was a little bit funny that the what should be the most boring part of it of the book, which would be like essentially a glorified board meeting, was definitely the stronger chapter compared to the. You know, there's still like a lot of obsession with interplanetary travel and like the logistics and for, you know, Isaac when they got to the Seychelles planet. You know, it's like you're visiting this whole new world. And like the first thing you like remark as like this entitled Foundationer is like, oh, this planet smells weird.
But hold on, there's more to that though, Peter, and I think this is worth exploring because it is a little bit, he doesn't mention a ridiculous technology, but in my mind I imagined a ridiculous technology, and that's where he talks about how Trevise learned this trick of, before landing on a planet, sniffing a handkerchief with the world scent on it during the landing. So by the time you get out and open the door to the world, You don't smell it.
So how do you get said pancreas?
Exactly. So I'm imagining in my head, I'm thinking like, what do they have, like a vending machine with
like Spaceballs? They have like a can of bear.
Different world scent options. And you like, it's like you B1 when we're going to Anacreon and B2 when we're going to, you know, whatever, Seychelles or wherever. And how do they collect these world scents from around the galaxy if they're like exploring there, or like they're on a military mission, right? Like, what do you like?
Right, he's like on a military round, you know. So it's like presumably he's going to be stationed there for a while.
Maybe they send some scouts out front, like they go in a higher speed spaceship. They land, they rub some handkerchiefs all over the planet, and they pack them all up in a plastic baggie. Put them back on the spaceship, fly back to the troops,
right?
So that they can hand out these world scent handkerchiefs to all the troops before they land, so they can be comfortable with the smell.
When you sign up for a Calganian newspaper delivery subscription, they come with free.
Oh, it's like a free
choice
gift.
Of two world handkerchiefs.
Two world scents of your choice, of your choosing.
Or you could join a delivery where you can get a different two world scents every month for the month. It's a world scent of the month club.
I like that. I like that idea. So we're at a point. So we've determined that like the second foundationers are all power hungry, arrogant, ambitious, egomaniacs.
I believe the term you're looking for is Democrats.
Oh. And the,
yeah, I'm kidding.
And the,
you just say politician.
No, you're not. No, you're not, Dan, but it's okay.
California. No, yeah, and they're being very political.
Yeah, and then Pelerad and Trevise are like magically just like stumbling their way through the universe. Probably Seychelles is probably Earth, for all we know. You know, maybe they've landed on it and they're there.
They're already there.
Right, like first try. Oh, to Zenda. Look, I just have a hunch like we should be there, you know? Like I'm getting the same kind of Second Foundation vibe. So anyway, so we're here. They're on the planet. They're walking around. Now they bump into.
They got a ground car.
Their tail, right?
Who's on their trail?
Yeah, the traitor who's followed them and beaten them there
on their tail.
He's followed them so well. He's gotten there first.
Well, they said the border guard guy is like.
I hope we didn't send the wrong
one. I left the other one in. Was the implication that he got there before they did?
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's two of the same ship.
Two of the same ship. So he's got the same ability to make those jumps and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But again, like, how do you trail somebody so well that you get there first?
Yeah, that, I didn't put two and two together. I just assumed that he was at when the border guard spoke. He was just the tail, and I'd forgotten about him. But then he's already in the. Maybe he just took the quicker line or something because he doesn't have.
He actually got boarded, you know.
He might have just snuck right through.
That the border guard situation, that was weird because it's like the boss and the lackey and he's like.
Yeah.
He doesn't like suspension. The boss. And yeah, that was a weird one as well.
I like that they remarked about him being like a dreamer. And then that was like something he held in contempt, like.
Yeah.
This guy, this like stern, miserable little man, like who did not have luxurious eyebrows.
No.
He like intuited his like the way that he would react to things. Oh, he was a dreamer. I couldn't stand dreamers.
No. You don't get into a career in a border guard for that type of.
Yeah.
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 She's hoity, highfalutin. The artistic career.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they let both these ships through. So somehow they were told in advance to expect a foundation ship of this type. So somebody's like pulling.
Who's
the
pulling
somewhere.
The strings?
Yeah. So, right. Something is
somebody guided them
just
there.
Just a question. You know? Who's doing what?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Brano probably is involved at this point. Cause she said like, look, the foundation flag will get you far, essentially. And so I'm wondering if she's like keeping tails on where they're going and using their faster than life communications newspaper network, like being able to like you know, she's sending the telegraph like through quantum space. She
printed something in the back office and she slides it into the top newspaper.
Or like, you know, her more appropriately, like she dictated to her assistant who then, you know, put it through the faster than life travel fax machine and it printed it out.
It's called a hyperfax.
Hyperfax.
That's a thing that exists somewhere.
That's what the
50,000 years from now it will, right?
Yeah.
How are they going to transmit the newspapers that need to get printed?
Now, do you think the Foundation series takes place after the Dune series when we've like gone back to technology?
Yeah, the Butlerian jihad is a massive failure, and so now they've got mailed newspapers and
they've forgotten where Earth is again.
Four-dimensional battlefield viewers as well. Don't forget about those.
Yeah, all that technology died away. That all happened in the because of the galactic fall.
The Great Sack.
But I don't think, while we're on the topic, I don't think that Dune happens as far into the future as Asimov projects Foundation to be happening in the future. Isn't it like...
It's like 100,000 years, isn't it?
I didn't think it was that
10,000 years? 10,000 years?
I thought it was more like 30,000.
Maybe somebody could write us in a mail.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like we talk about in some of the other ones where it's like in real time, you're almost like, oh, what? You start to make these connections and see things that are happening, you know, and there's obviously a lot going on. There's obviously a plan in place. Who's operating it and who's swerving who in a certain manner. It's interesting to find out because you don't know who's the master operator and who's just the patsy because it could be anybody.
You know, that's what I'm struggling with. I think that's part of the journey and maybe why this book got such high accolades is because it's really hard to pin down even, you know, an isolated suspect that it would even be between two potential. There's like four or five potential players here who could be the nefarious actor. And I'm also similar to Peter's comment earlier in other books is like, why are we so convinced that the second Foundation is good? I'm like not convinced, or that the mule is bad even. I'm not convinced that this other, you know, force is necessarily for evil. You know, maybe it is for the good of humankind. Maybe they do have this ambition to let people be free and live well and improve their quality of life. And, you know,
it feels like there's not like a ton of stakes right now. Cause there was like, okay, we have the trial, right? Jenna Ball's going to lose everything. Now trial's over. He is going to be, he's almost guaranteed to be first speaker, right? Assuming he goes out on a successful voyage. And even it seems almost like even if it's not successful, he'll be okay. We don't really know what the consequences are is if he fails. Like, is it the threat that the Galactic Empire is going to fall? Like the second, you know, the first Foundation is going to fall? Is that the veiled threat there? And then, you know, we haven't really gotten into, you know, there's the reveal that the traitor has been discovered, which we knew from the beginning was on their tail to monitor things. We're looking for Earth, right? Like, I don't know what's going to happen next. Like, there's got to be, I'm expecting the
action. What's his name? They're going to meet with the Mun-Li.
Right. Manly Mun-Li.
Chun-Li. And he's going to.
No, Chun-Li is back on Chun-Li. The council still.
Chun-Li, I thought you're that was Jesus. I think it was Street Fighter 2. Talking about Street Fighter 2.
Got it.
No, I mean that. Imagine there'll be some light shed on exactly, you know, what the actual nature of their relationship is there. What he's there for, you know, if they are friends or enemies or, maybe, you know, they had a very brief interaction right in the beginning, right. And there's
where a one whole thought lot of the other one was an idiot.
They were kind of like started off talking and trot, you know, then they had the whole inner circumstances of the assembly, and then they parted ways, and now they're met back up again. I mean, we're literally almost at the exact halfway point of the book. So I think, you know, business is about to pick up in terms of, you know, what's going on. Mm-hmm. Now, what could be, who knows?
Yeah. I feel like I don't have like a good beat on what's going to happen next. Like presumably they're going to find
halfway through the book. I still have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You figure it's all set up to go into, like, you know,
presumably we're going to find Earth or something that hints at Earth. Right.
Well, I mean, it's still an open question. Like, was Earth real or not? Right. Maybe Earth is just a myth.
We clearly don't exist.
Like, you know, it's possible.
Anything's possible.
I mean, that would be the real twist at the end. Right.
It's actually an imaginary, we're on Earth planet of the apes.
Right.
Yeah. Earth was inside of us all along.
Yeah. They zoom out and the Statue of Liberty has a monkey head on it.
Right. I mean, I don't think that's what Eisenman has doing here.
A Hamish person face on it instead of a human person face on it.
I think he's setting it up. It's like, okay, so yeah, this whole time. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm second guessing myself now as I'm trying to like make a joke about it.
I have no idea. I read it through. I'm just like, I have no clue.
I have this vision that Isaac Asimov like walks out of Planet of the Apes 1 and he immediately goes to his typewriter and is like, I know how to end the pandemic.
When did Planet of the Apes 1
Hamish come people. Out.
It was way before 1980, right?
Yeah, it was like 1973 or 70s. Something like that.
Yeah.
That's another easy one.
When was Charlton Heston a heartthrob? Because that's when it happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it could go anywhere, but I feel like, yeah, that every time you're right, Dan, you got me second guessing myself now because I kind of assume that we discover Earth at some point or we discover the reality of Earth or what happened to Earth. But I'm also assuming that Isaac Asimov has kind of set us up to discover that because he's writing it from Earth in an Earth time where Earth is all we know.
Like we have,
but that could be the play. That could be the play in this book. He could be just like totally setting us up to swerve us at the end.
We've got our guy, Travis, about to have his showdown with Mun Li after they run into each other on the new planet of Seychelles, and our unexpected hero from the table, Gandabal, is apparently going to go meet him too. So I guess we'll find out what happens next week or whenever we actually get this thing released on the Such Nerds podcast. I have been your host for tonight, Miss Scarlet, in the ballroom with the candlestick, along with my illustrious co-hosts,
Grandmother Space Warp from Florida, USA.
And Dan from Los Angeles.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.